Sandstorms are slowing U.S. and British forces, and they're hindering air missions. Nevertheless, Britain's Prime Minister Tony Blair said today that things are going well, but there will be stumbling blocks.
There will be resistance all the way to the end of this campaign. It will take time and perseverance and the continuing skill and dedication and professionalism of our armed forces to break it down. But nobody, least of all the forces loyal to Saddam, should be in any doubt that the resistance will be broken down and that the goals of the coalition forces will be met.
The mobilization of U.S. military force for the war in Iraq is the biggest since the 1991 Gulf War. The mission is the most ambitious since Vietnam. About 250,000 U.S. forces were assembled for this invasion, along with hundreds of aircraft. Those troops are in the fifth day of their ground war. The challenge they're facing is prompting some debate about whether U.S. commanders have the right mix of air and ground forces, NPR's Tom Jeltam reports.
Thanks to leaks, the Iraq war plan was almost openly discussed for months before the campaign began. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld was said to favor a relatively small ground force with a bigger emphasis on air power and special operations. Army traditionalists preferred to go with a much larger, heavier force. The final force plan represented a compromise, more ground troops than Rumsfeld reportedly thought necessary, but a smaller force than was assembled for the 1991 Gulf War. The commander of this war, General Tommy Franks, right now has just one Marine division and two Army divisions, the 3rd Infantry and the 101st Airborne. Only the 3rd is a heavy division with armor. The war plan left a larger role, meanwhile, for precision air power. The initial so-called shock and awe phase of the bombing campaign has now passed. U.S. ground forces are deep into Iraq, but they are facing some resistance. Retired Army officer Ralph Peters, who writes often on warfighting issues, says the argument can be made this is a plan for war done on the cheap.
I believe we'll pull it off, but the cardinal advantage of being a superpower is superpower. We had the time, we had the forces. But the ground contribution to this campaign was purposely kept to the lowest possible level to prove that air power could do the job, we could cut ground forces, spend the money on technology alone.
At yesterday's Pentagon briefing, a reporter wondered whether General Franks had brought enough armor to the Gulf. Major General Stanley McChrystal, Vice Director of Operations on the Pentagon staff, said General Franks has incredible flexibility with the force he has assembled.
In fact, he has a heavy division, the 3rd ID, which has moved with extraordinary speed, more than 200 miles in a short amount of time. He's got the air assault capability of the 101st, which gives him incredible reach and the striking power of a large number of Apache helicopters. He's got a Marine force, which has been remarkably successful to date. And then he's got a coalition force from the Brits.
But some limitations on the force are already apparent. The 3rd Infantry Division has slowed in its march to Baghdad. Iraqi paramilitary forces have staged what U.S. commanders are calling nuisance attacks. Yesterday, a fleet of Apache attack helicopters, the key aviation asset of the 101st Airborne Division, ran into a fierce firefight when they attacked Republican Guard units south of Baghdad. Ralph Peters says he'd feel better if there were more units left behind to secure rear elements.
We're spread very thin on the ground. Right now, as the 101st Airborne Division is being committed, it leaves General Franks with no strategic reserve, no heavy reserve immediately available should things go wrong.
General Franks himself does not seem concerned. Speaking to reporters in Qatar yesterday, Franks said U.S. forces have made rapid and in some cases dramatic progress and that resistance has mostly been sporadic. Tom Jeltam, NPR News, The Pentagon.